And you're tuned to 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. Coming up next, it's the long edition of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides for Sunday, the 6th of March. Let's hope the power doesn't go out. And reminding you, this is a pre-recorded show, but pre-recorded not long before the actual airing date. So if you got thoughts on the show, and so far that really hasn't been the case, but if you do, or have you have stuff you want to broadcast on the air, you can get in touch by calling me at 831-423-HUFF, H-U-F-F. That's 423-4833, which is also a contact point for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. So do it, and we will announce any news that you bring me. Possibly, who knows, if you've got more information, I may interview you, and we can put that on the air as well. So stay tuned for Bathrobe Spears Broadsides.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you. Sing me of wars and sing me of bread lines. Tell me of front page news. Sing me of strikes and last minute headlines. Dress your observation in syncopation. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must get hot with what is what, or I won't love you. Satirical, putting the mirror into miracle. It must be packed with social fact, or I won't love you. Sing me of kings and conferences martial. Tell me of mills and mines. Sing me of courts that aren't impartial. What's to be done with them? Tell me in rhythm. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must be tense with common sense, or I won't love you.
And welcome to another edition of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. I'm Robert Norse. This is, as I mentioned before, pre-recorded, but, you know, if you've got thoughts, give me a call again, as I mentioned, 423-4833, even during the show, and I will either perhaps be at that phone number or else get back to you by phone. Please leave a message or a contact point where you think you can be reached. I'm also available often, starting to return to the HUFF meetings. HUFF is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, as mentioned before. We meet every Wednesday at 11 o'clock at the Sub Rosa Cafe at 703 Pacific. And on occasion, I butt my head into the Freedom Sleepers events, which happen every Tuesday night. There'll be one this Tuesday, the 35th, as I understand it, as well as, of course, the 7 o'clock council meeting, where there will be a discussion of a sleeping ban amendment that eliminates from the camping ordinance the word sleeping from much of the ordinance, and I'm going to be discussing that at some length on this broadcast and perhaps interviewing a few people about it. In the afternoon, there are some other items coming up, one specifically, the last one on the afternoon agenda prior to the 5 o'clock oral communication, where people should come if they have non-agenda stuff to bring to the attention of the city and, more important, of the community. They can be homeless issues, provided they don't directly relate to changes in the sleeping ban law. Posner, however, Micah Posner, the council member, is getting raked over the coals for having an ADU, an accessory dwelling unit, in his backyard. I've been reading over the city attorney Tony Condotti's analysis of whether he's done anything illegal or whether he's done anything unethical in which he would financially profit, whether there's any basis for a city council taking any action as far as trying to remove him from office, which apparently they can't do, nor should they do it. Micah and I talked about this issue last Thursday when he was on the air. I didn't have a lot of information about it at that time. I'm having more now that I read Condotti's 5-page staff report, which you can find online if you're interested. Go to Santa Cruz City Council meetings and then check for the agenda for March 8th. It's, halfway down at the near the end of the afternoon agenda. And that's on the agenda in the afternoon if you wish to come and check that out, probably around 3:30 or so is my guess, but it's no definite time. The meeting starts at 2:30. All of other things I'm going to discuss around the city council agenda. In fact, I think what I'm going to do is begin that process now. I just sent a Public Records Act request to the Bren Lehr, the city administrator, city clerk, requesting the full information of one of the individuals who has filed a claim against the city for $5,000 for abusive behavior by a police officer, I think Officer Gomez, the name is, for harassing him with a camping ticket when all he was doing was sitting and eating dinner. Now, at my demand some months ago, maybe a year or two ago, the city has finally begun to put on its agenda the actual claim form, written out demands, concerns, accounts by people who are suing the city for different purposes, or at least their lawsuit hasn't yet reached the court, but they're making a claim against the city, which is a prerequisite to suing the city. They will then routinely turn down your claim, after which you take them to court if you wish, whether a small claims court or municipal court, municipal superior court. Anyway, this guy, Philip Slaymaker, is concerned about the behavior of Officer 197 Gomez, who on January 29th, 2014, on Pacific Avenue, harassed him for finishing dinner. According to his account, which is written on this form, the cop drove up to him, said that he was camping. He said no, but he got a camping ticket anyway. Said he was just passing through. It's interesting, this is, 2 years ago, and in fact, it's too late to file, it is too late to file a claim against the city, either in state court or federal court. But what's relevant for us in the community is, this is a concern about the police department. You try to make this kind of a complaint to the police department's independent auditor, so-called independent auditor Bob Aronson, he will keep it confidential. The public won't be able to see it unless you hold a press conference or otherwise publicize it. So, and I beg your pardon, it looks like his Gomez's number is either 6197 or G197, according to this handwritten claim form. However, missing from this claim form is the mailing address for Mr. Slaymaker. Is that his name? Philip. Yeah, Slaymaker. And also his phone number. It's blanked out. Now, it took me some time to get them to even put the limited information that they are putting on the city council agenda. Why is this important? Well, in a way it isn't, because the city has a lot of power to ignore public comment, and usually what you say at the city council doesn't matter. But, of course, it should. And you obviously need the information if you are going to speak at city council, either as a witness to this, as a friend of this, as a concerned citizen about this kind of behavior, either in defense of or in opposition to the claim, the person making the claim, or the police officer involved, or I don't know, the whole system that allows this kind of stuff to happen, or the accuracy of what went down. This claim will first be considered in closed session, which happens an hour before, usually, in the room behind the city council. It's closed, most of it, but you are allowed to go in at the beginning in the so-called open interval and speak on the issue. And so that will happen on Tuesday. Some people will be able to come and speak about Philip Slaymaker's case. I don't know Philip Slaymaker. I have no idea what the wrongs and rights or truths or falsehoods are of this claim. I don't intend to be at this meeting, but I think the full information should be there for anybody who wants to in advance. That's why they post these agendas in advance. That's why the city had to go to the trouble of creating a stand on the sidewalk where these agendas are posted, because they've adopted the ridiculous, abusive, and repressive procedure of not allowing people to walk up to the city council display at night, which is right next to the city council chamber door, and read the agenda after 10 o'clock at night, because they want to keep the whole area banned for protesters, even though they have no legitimate health or safety or property damage concerns about this, and never have. This is simply their attempt to spare themselves embarrassment and to essentially respond to their staff, which wants to discourage protest. It is, you know, it's part, this is what authorities do worldwide, and certainly in Santa Cruz it's a tradition which has become worse, and we've been fighting it, those of us who are either freedom sleepers or supporters of the freedom sleepers. In fact, that is going to be one of my defenses when I go back to court in April and defend against two tickets for being at the City Hall grounds area trying to look at the agenda after 10 o'clock at night, before they even move things out to the sidewalk so that people could view them on the public sidewalk without violating the sacred space of the City Council grounds after dark. Anyway, so the City Council agenda coming up on Tuesday, and that's what I'm talking about. This particular claim by Philip Slaymaker, I don't have a lot to say about it. What I did want to mention, though, is I have filed a claim, not a claim, a demand with the City Hall that, first of all, they supply the mailing address and the residential phone of Philip Slaymaker. Of course, it won't do me much good to get it 10 days from now after the City Council has voted on this issue as to whether to accept it or reject it. So what I've added to this demand is that in all future agendas, they provide the mailing address and residence phone along with the whole claim that they are now reluctantly providing after being pressured to do so, the description by the claimant as to what his or her concerns were about the police or about the city or whatever reason they're asking for money from the city, asking for a claim of money. And that they do this 72 hours before, as one of the documents that you can find when you go online and look at the city council agendas. Bren Lehr has not been my friend in a lot of these issues. And I don't mean to be cruel to Bren, but she seems a relatively uptight person who is very kind of wedded to rules, and also has a certain, what would one call her, a power tripper? To some extent, yes. She was the person who seemed to be although it's not clear whether the initiative came from her or from former Mayor Lynn Robinson, having me arrested for having a tape recorder at City Hall. She first insisted that I not put the tape recorder on the podium where I'd placed it for 20 years. And I said, no, that's the most convenient place, doesn't bother anybody, and it's the right of the media as well as the public to do it. So Robinson then took to City Council a vote to make it very explicit that that couldn't be done, and then she had me arrested when I did it. Now, I was never charged. I was charged with a misdemeanor up to a year in jail, but in April of 2014, the district attorney refused to prosecute that case. Obviously, a jury would have some trouble convicting a reporter because the claim was I was disrupting the meeting by putting the tape recorder up there. And this is part of a broader struggle I have with the City Council, which has to do with their claim that whatever they say, if this they say something constitutes a disruption because it violates their rules, that they can have you stop doing it or force you to leave the room or even arrest you if you try to insist on your right to be present at a council meeting. This, of course, is nonsense, and it's also unconstitutional. And that's one of the, probably the only, well, certainly one of the good things that came out of my 11-year struggle around the so-called mock Nazi salute, the Heil Krohn case, where Mayor Krohn had me arrested for making a silent brief, you're acting like a bunch of fascists, silent salute to them after he had shut down and denied the right of a woman, a peace activist, to speak, even though she'd been standing in line for half an hour with two others of us who had waited. And he shut this down before everyone had been allowed to speak and before the time had elapsed. And we sued him for the arrest, that he had me arrested and taken to court. That was Sergeant Bushy Baker, that, you know, the great hero who was recently celebrated, notorious for 10 women accusing him of sexual molestation back in 1992, notorious for his harassment of the homeless people. And I have to keep saying this because it is really a kind of profound obscenity to me to see this guy and Elizabeth Butler as well, but more so Lauren Butchie Baker, glorified repeatedly every year by the police department. He's sort of used as a poster boy. And they did this even when he was being accused of, when women publicly testify that he had groped them and inappropriately searched them. And I have, you know, he's the only officer against whom I've ever won a lawsuit in Santa Cruz. I mean, I don't do a lot of lawsuits. Mostly I talk about these issues on the air. I try to stand up on the ground. But, you know, the legal process is long and frustrating and tedious and expensive. It's just often not a good way to go. In any case, getting back to the issue, which is the importance, what came out of the lawsuit against the City Council on the mock Nazi salute was I did not win any money from the two mayors involved who I took to court. I was never tried for anything myself. I was never even charged with anything, just taken to jail, you know, I mean, falsely arrested. But I lost in the sense that I couldn't get the city to pay any damages or to pay the attorneys who spent many, many years, that's Kate Wells and David Beauvais, fighting this case. But what did come out of this was a decision by the Ninth Circuit Court, a reaffirmation that a rule violation is not a disruption of the City Council unless it actually does disrupt the City Council. So, for instance, when I turn around and turn my back to the City Council and talk to the community, because I think the City Council needs to have its back turned on them, that doesn't happen all the time, but it has. And Mayor Lane, who did this 4 years ago, insists I turn back and I ignore him. He can't have me arrested. In fact, he has to let me finish speaking. And that can happen in a number of other circumstances, where if you violate the rules of the City Council, but you're not actually materially disrupting the meeting, they do not have any basis for having you prosecuted. I mean, they may have you arrested, they may take you to jail, and they may have to get released, but there will be no case, and in theory, you will have a lawsuit. Of course, that, again, can, you know, go all kinds of ways and takes all kinds of time. But I think it has deterred the city council from behaving in this fashion somewhat. Mostly, unfortunately, they've continued to pass all these rules. They have new rules that you can't block the aisles, or that means, for example, they used to insist after this tape recording business where I was arrested for having a, it was a tape recorder at the time, not an audio recorder, putting it up where I usually put it up so it picks up information. They insisted you have to attend your tape recorder. That's to be sit with it. So I had to take a stool and sit next to it. Well, Lane created a new rule. That's Mayor Lane, that said that you had to you couldn't sit in the aisles. You couldn't even though it wasn't really blocking the aisles. And so I haven't gone in to challenge a lot of that stuff because I guess one has only limited energy, and in the phrase that I really don't like, one picks one's battles. I think you have to fight your battles where they hit you, or else you start losing in the broader sense. But it is true to some extent that often one's being attacked on so many fronts, it's hard to address. But it can be a pretext when you say you have to pick your battles. So for those who just tuned in, this is Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. I'm talking about the agenda on the Tuesday Santa Cruz City Council meeting. My concern that if individuals are making claims against the city, that all this information be available for the public to look at before the City Council meeting. And it isn't right now. They are redacting address and contact information for people. That means you cannot get in touch with them if you're a media person to interview them. And you cannot, if you're an interested party, talk to the people beforehand and see if maybe you're a supporter, maybe you were a witness to what happened, who knows. Let's take a musical break. I'll be right back. And don't go away, or if you do, come back.
Now meet this gentleman from high society, who under the lurid star of notoriety came to live with us just 5 years ago. It's to his genius that we owe this show. The former Marquis Monsieur de Sade, whose books were banned, his essays barred, while he's been prosecuted and reviled, thrown into jail and for some years exiled. The introduction's over. Now the play of Jean-Paul Marat can get underway. Tonight, the date is the 13th of July, 1808. And on this night, our cast intend showing how 15 years ago, night without end fell on this man, this invalid, and you are going to see him bleed. And see this woman, after careful thought, take up the dagger and cut him short. Homage to Marat!
Execution 4 years after, remember how those courtiers took their final bow.
The laurels all went to decorate academics, generals, and heads of state, and their heads are enormous.
Oh, Marat, By your side, we'll stand or fall. You're the only one that we can trust.
Don't scratch your scum, or they'll never get any better.
Betrayed, Mara in the courtroom, Mara underground, sometimes the otter and sometimes the hound, fighting all the gentry and fighting every priest, businessman, the bourgeois, the military beast, Mara always ready to stifle every scheme of the sons of the ass-licking dying regime. We got new generals, our leaders are new. They sit and they argue, and all that they do is sell their own colleagues and ride upon their backs. Or kill them, or break them, or give them all the axe. Screaming in language that no one understands, of the rights that we have with our unbeating hands. When we wipe out the lottery,
and that, for those who don't recognize it, was the Marat Sad, or a small bit from it, which you can find online. The entire movie is available on YouTube. I recommend it heartily. It's really a well-done production by the Royal Shakespeare Company from decades ago, but still really relevant and really passionate and really moving. Check it out. I'm going to be playing a few more songs from the Marat Sad. The full name of that is The Assassination and Persecution of Jean-Paul Marat as performed by the inmates of Charenton under the direction of the Marquis de Sade. One of the longest play names I've ever heard. So you are still tuned to Free Radio 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. Can't call in. We don't have a studio to broadcast from, so this is being done sort of independently. Each of us finds our own way, each of us broadcasters, to put up our shows. That is not happening as much as I wish it were, and will probably happen even less and less unless we can find a studio. If you have any ideas about where there's a 10 by 10 space, 10 feet by 10 feet, even an area in a backyard, and we don't have to be an accessory dwelling unit, we don't intend to live there, we are just going to be using it as an office, so it makes it easier. We are interested, just got to get access to internet and electricity, and we can pay you $500 as a finder's fee. So give a call to 423-4833 if you have any ideas, and we will be grateful, and I think the community will too. And getting back to the City Council agenda, there's presentations and service pins and proclamations. That's going to be Mayor Matthews, who's running the council. There is an update on the Bob Lee Community Partnership. Bob Lee, of course, is the district attorney who, well-spoken, handsome, tall, often friendly guy who spent hundreds of thousands of dollars prosecuting me and 10 other activists for briefly being in a building that is still vacant and owned by, I think it's owned by Swenson. I could be wrong about that, but it was formerly the Coast Commercial Bank at 75 River Street, and then a Wells Fargo leased building. Wells Fargo, you may remember, the bank that dodged the bullet and got, in fact, more ammunition itself in the notorious fraudster foreclosures of 5 years ago or more. Anyway, Bobley Community Partnership for Accountability, Connection, and Treatment, that's the PACT program. It was previously called the DAP program. This is the, for my money, a kind of a pseudo-help program for homeless people. It actually is designed to help downtown businesses who want to get rid of the more visible, chronic, and intractable folks who have no housing on the street. And it gives them housing under threat of jail, and it's gets rid of some of their charges, which of course are bogus to start with because they have to do with their homelessness. Although the woman in charge of it, Susan, is it Howe? I don't have her last name exactly right now, but she insists that infractions are not a part of the infraction crimes, like the sleeping ban, oh, sitting next to a building, are not a part of the crime records that are considered or that are involved with this program. But I don't think there's been a lot of accountability on this program. It is one of these feel-good programs that, you know, again, is not really concerned with addressing the problems of majority of homeless people, but rather a way of clearing the streets of a few homeless folks that merchants really don't want to be there, but they can't seem to get rid of them through the criminal process. Anyway, there's no information on this update. I'm looking at it online. Usually there are documents. It's presentation number 3 at 2:30 on March 8th, the city council meeting. But there's no documentation. And the reason for that, of course, I was concerned about the fact that there was no supporting materials which you could look at, as there are for many of the other items. And I spoke with, I emailed Bren Lehr about this issue, I think it was last summer, around the issue of the public bathrooms, perhaps, or it was some other issue, perhaps. And what was happening was there was a, and this began my involvement with the city council on this, on the issue of providing public documents to the community so they can see before the council meeting, or at least during the council meeting, have access to all the written material that the council has. And they're supposed to, the staff is supposed to be providing this to the general public that attends, and even to those who don't attend. Well, I had to stand up, interrupt the meeting, and demand that we be provided information that the council was looking at that we couldn't see. It was on some item. And I tried to do it quietly first, and I was ignored by Bren Lehr, city administrator, and ignored, I think, the sergeant-at-arms was nice enough to walk over and tell her that that this is what I wanted. She refused to do anything. So I had to interrupt the meeting. And Don Lane gave me he was mayor at the time, his copy. How noble of him. Well, you know, it should have been available for the general public generally, and that was fine. Afterward, when I asked Bren Lehr by email to make sure that such documents were available in advance, she said she wouldn't do that because these were presentations that were made as PowerPoint activities with additional written material and only provided at the time of the actual PowerPoint presentation. And I said, no, that's not adequate, obviously. But I've gotten no further on that because you can only do so many things. But that's sort of the background of that. There's a consent agenda on the March 8th City Council, which is a number of items that don't particularly attract my interest or limited expertise, although there is a Santa Cruz Metro resolution supporting the preservation of service bus lines to high route or high use routes in the city of Santa Cruz. directs the mayor to transmit this to the Metro Board. I haven't looked at this very closely. Sometimes these amendments that are interested in preserving aren't trying to preserve as much as they're trying to preserve. Metro is a really key issue for a lot of poor people in this county, and so for sure that's an item that, if you want to speak on it, you get to rush through a two-minute presentation before it comes up and without seeing any staff report, unless you can persuade a council member to remove it from the general consent agenda to be discussed separately, which used to be a matter of course. Any member of the public used to be able to do it. Now, thanks to council member and now supervisor Ryan Coonerty, that's no longer possible, and the ordinary citizen has to beg and plead and request and codge a council member beforehand to agree to remove it. Or you can ask to do it at the city council meeting from the public podium, and they may deign to allow you to do it. Otherwise, you've got 2 minutes to discuss any and all items on the city council's consent agenda, of which there are usually somewhere between 6 and 30. Today there, or at least on Tuesday, there'll be 13. I'm looking over some of the other items, and I'm not finding stuff that jumps out at me, so I'm going to ignore them, but you can find them online by going to Santa Cruz City Council meetings. After the agenda, there's a traffic impact fee annual report, which I've got no idea. Then on item 15 is the one that I guess some folks are interested in. Councilmember Micah Posner has been called out big time by the Sentinel and other right-wingers for having an ADU that was unpermitted and unlicensed in his backyard, that he was essentially providing at low cost to a renter. And this is becoming the basis for a big deal, although if you look at the staff report, which is 5 pages long, from the city attorney, Tony Condotti, you find that there is no basis for removing him from office. There's no basis for claiming that he had a conflict of interest because he didn't vote on anything that actually involved lowering the rent on ADUs for his thing. He might have erred in not reporting it on a Form 700. That's a little unclear, but he's trying to rectify it. But still, Condotti proposes that the council's options, given the given the ruckus raised by Take Back Santa Cruz and similar groups who don't like Micah Posner at all. I have a lot of problems with Micah Posner from the left, and they have a lot of problems from the right. They are suggesting, Condotti is suggesting, three possibilities. One is to adopt a public statement characterizing his conduct, Posner's conduct. We liked it, we didn't like it, we wish it weren't the case. Another is to censure him, which would not have a bearing on his ability to continue on the council. And the third is to direct the city attorneys to further analyze and report on the zoning regulations creating a disqualifying conflict of interest, which so far Condotti has not found. That's the last item on the afternoon agenda, item 15. There's a couple of other items after, but they're very pro forma, council meeting calendar and memberships in city groups and outside agencies. After which at 5 o'clock, assuming that their meeting closes fairly early, which I have no idea if it will or won't, is oral communication. And during oral communication, of course, people can talk about whatever they want if it wasn't on the agenda. So you can't talk about the camping ordinance, which will be coming up in the evening at 7 o'clock. And you can't discuss the Posner censure resolution as it's proposed, or the issue as it was proposed in the afternoon. Although I have often insisted that you have the right to refer to items that have happened in the afternoon if you want. Because as long as you're not urging the council to act differently, because action's already been taken, and as long as you're not essentially testifying on that item to the council. You can comment on the council's behavior on that item. I think that's perfectly legitimate. So that's at 5 o'clock. People get 3 minutes, depending on whether two-minute Matthews, our mayor, as I've called her in the past, and she seems to have it. I believe she's been doing that more recently as well, although I have asked her to allow 5 minutes for the organization HUF to speak on the camping ordinance, which comes up at 7 o'clock. And as to that,